Good morning, everyone. Frank Vaughn here. It is June 28th, 2026. And I wanted to check in. I've really been leaning into my family. I've really been leaning into fasting. And though I have broke the fast and have discovered through some very concerted experimentation which foods are irritating me the most, I've really been leaning into that process, and a week has passed by since I last made a video, and there's a saying that we've all heard since childhood, or at least any of us who were raised in the 80s or 90s, is if you don't have something nice to say or something good to say, don't say anything at all. Fairly challenging saying to live up to when you're a content creator and you specifically talk about politics and geopolitics at this time in the world. But there are a few things that I wouldn't mind getting off my chest. Number one, the MOU, this so-called peace pact with Iran, which is nothing. It's literally not worth the paper it's written on, and it never was. The Americans agreed to a bunch of things that they clearly don't ever intend to deliver on. A couple things I watched this week, because I'm still paying very close attention to events. A couple things that really stand out in my mind is, number one, Vance went to Switzerland, and I actually don't know if that was this week. It might have been late last week, or it might have been over the weekend. Doesn't really matter. He went to Switzerland for the formal signing. And so the Iranian delegation's there, the Pakistani delegation's there, the Omanis are there. And one of the most telling things I've seen in a long time is that when everybody was shaking hands and getting ready for a group photo, the Pakistani, I can't remember what his position is in Pakistan, what his formal title is, but he's a part of the Pakistani government. And Vance is doing everything in his power to signal, non-verbally, that he wants a handshake. He's smiling at him. He's trying to make contact. He's reaching his hand out. And at first, this guy sees him. You can see him see Vance, but he ignores him, completely ignores him. Shakes everybody else's hand, gives hugs to his Arab neighbors. And then when they're finally lining up for the photo, Vance leans in more aggressively for a handshake. And the guy shoots him a look that could kill. The most icy look you ever seen. Like Manson lamp eyes he gave Vance and wouldn't shake his hand. And you know, when I saw that, it kind of brings into focus how all of these countries are caught up in a bunch of drama and a bunch of domestic issues with oil shortages and supply issues and the reconfiguration of alliances. Remember when Justin Trudeau announced the CERB payments were going to go out. Everybody was going to get it, and we were going to work out how, whether it was fairly distributed after the fact. And then after the fact, it was a disaster. And he said, well, the CRA is going to take care of that. And the CRA got bogged down in his decision as he goes and skates off with Kate Perry to do whatever they want. It's the same situation in the Middle East right now. Trump caused all of this problem by following Netanyahu into a war. And everybody else is left to try and clean up the mess that they made in the Middle East. A new security architecture has to be arranged because the American bases, and I've been saying this for months. I told you this months ago, but now the Wall Street Journal's writing about it, so everybody's reporting about it in the mainstream, that the Iranians have devastated American military bases in the region. And they're probably not going to rebuild. I highly doubt the Americans have as much presence as they have today. They'll probably have some presence, but they're not going to dominate the region. I still hear talking heads representing the American administration talking about how the Persian Gulf is international water, how the Straits of Hormuz are international waterways. They're not. They've never been. And when you look at precedent in the world, you look at the Bosporus Strait, the Dardanelles, as it used to be called, between the Turkey controls these narrow waterways, are under the control of nations. They're not international waterways. This is Omani and Iranian water. At any rate, they're still bombing each other. There's debate online as to whether or not it was the Americans who violated the MOU first or it was the Iranians. It was clearly the Americans. The terms of the MOU, if you read the thing, gives Iran and Oman control of the straits. And it's not the straits. That's another thing. You see how it slips in common parlance? It's a strait. It's not the straits. It's one thing for me as a commentator to say it because I keep hearing it. it's another thing for the American administration and for very well-greased news media to keep calling it the Straits. They're not the Straits. They are one Strait, so they're not even they, but then again, it's 2026 and we do all this gender nonsense, so maybe it is the Straits. Maybe they identify as multiple Straits, but it's one Strait. It is the Strait of Hormuz. The Strait of Hormuz is territorial water of Oman and Iran, and it's always been that way. And up to this point, for 47 years, this Iranian regime that everybody tells us is constantly threatening everybody else, even though it's, whether you love them or hate them, it doesn't matter what you think. They've been under attack for 47 years. They were under attack by their proxy in Iraq, and hundreds of thousands of them died and they suffered. They've been under attack by sanction, and in the entirety of that history, talk about, another thing that makes me sick is hearing people talk about how the Iranians have been wreaking havoc on the world for 47 years by funding proxies in Yemen and Lebanon, as if the other nations of the world don't fund their own proxies, as if the Iranians aren't playing the same game everyone else is playing. I'm really working hard to not swear here. It's really frustrating because it's all based on BS. Sure, the Iranians play the game, but the Americans, directly and indirectly, are far more responsible for more Iranian deaths than Iran will ever be responsible for American deaths. And people will say, well, what about the Beirut bombing? And what about the embassy crisis and all of these events that happened historically? What about these individual actions and that it requires an American response when American lives are on the line? Well, look at Syria. You've got Jalani, who's now changed his name to his nom de guerre, al-Shara. This is an ISIS man who literally has the blood of American military servicemen on his hands. He was invited to the White House, glad-handing with Donald Trump. And now the Trump administration is apparently begging Shara to invade Lebanon. And there is some potential interest for the Syrians, the current Syrian government, to do so because the remnants of the Assad regime have regrouped in Lebanon. I don't think they're in any position to try and launch an invasion. I mean, we're on the verge of a Lebanese civil war. This MOU that the Israel, and this is another example of Israel. They sign a separate MOU with the Lebanese government, the Christian government, based in Beirut. Lebanon is 31% Christian, but they hold most of the political power, at least in Beirut. This is why Lebanon is not controlled by Beirut. It's because it's deeply divided. This is, once again, Christians being thrown on the sacrificial altar to satisfy Israeli demands. In that MOU, that separate MOU, they talk about how Hezbollah has to be disarmed, and there's all these conditions which Hezbollah will never agree to, the Shiites in Lebanon will never agree to, let alone the Sunni population. There's so many things. American foreign policy, the foreign policy that they've done in the region is actually driving Sunnis and Shias together, who have not been a united, they're not united. I mean, Shia Islam is the minority in Islam. They're different branches of the same faith, but they're being driven together by U.S. foreign policy in a way that is very dangerous for the long-term perspective, for a long-term perspective. At any rate, these Christians have signed a deal they can't keep, virtually guaranteeing a Lebanese civil war in the offing, which is exactly what, and this is the wild thing, the Israeli government is now out there saying exactly what they think. First off, they want to ethnically cleanse Gaza. They want to ethnically cleanse South Lebanon. They're ethnically cleansing Hebron, so the settlers go in, rip people out of their homes, burn down villages that are inhabited by Christians, and the IDF just stands and guards everybody while they're doing it. So the IDF's hands are clean because they're not actually doing the burning, but they're making sure the settlers are protected while they go about looting and pillaging and destroying. It's pretty wild how this little nation that's smaller than the size of New Jersey can come to do so much harm to so many people and then somehow claim it's self-defense and call everybody an anti-Semite who dares call it out, including the 2 million Jews that live in Israel who disagree with all of this. There's millions of Israelis who aren't down for this. Unfortunately, they are grossly outnumbered by the Zionists, who are 60-odd percent of the population at this point. And the opposition in Israel wants more war, not less war. The criticism of Netanyahu is he's not going far enough. I don't know what he's supposed to do. The IDF has very limited manpower. They have the same demographic problem everybody else does. They can't just magically come up with a number of troops. And Hezbollah has been doing massive damage because they're fighting a modern war. They're fighting a drone war. Aircraft carriers and F-35s is the past. Drones and missiles is the future. And everybody, and this is, it's, you know, the comparison that comes to mind is the American military is kind of like the French military before World War II. Great big military with great big numbers, but designed to fight a war that had been technologically surpassed. That's what's being learned in real time. That's why the Americans have invested 270x the amount of money in drone warfare. They're behind. They're behind the Russians. They're behind the Ukrainians. They're behind the Iranians. They're behind. This idea I heard again in the media today is, as Trump is out there surveying the construction site he's turned DC into with money the Americans don't have. The United States doesn't have money for war. It doesn't have money for all the renovations at the Capitol. It needs bridges. It needs roads. It needs infrastructure. It needs reshored manufacturing. It needs all of these things. But instead, it's doing all this other nonsense. And that you know, I'll just skip to another subject altogether, and because we're talking about Washington, D.C. America 250 is coming up. And one of the mistakes that I think I've made over the years is assuming that Trump is more of a statesman than he was a politician, and that was a mistake that I made. I thought that what he did in front of the cameras and what he did to aggravate the media was a deliberate plan, that there was this other side of him. And I think there is another side. I think there's more to Trump than what we see in the media, especially when he's with his family, but far less than I gave credit for. And we're seeing that because America 250 is becoming one big Trump rally, and I think it's disgusting. I think it is genuinely disgusting. The Republic is greater than one man, even down to planting 47 trees around the White House to commemorate his own presidency. As the whole thing burns, as American power in the world wanes, I don't know how people can't see it at this point. America is losing its influence. The opportunity to reorganize the empire, to draw it down and refocus efforts peaceably and cheaply on North America and Fortress North America is evaporating in real time because of this stupid endeavor in the Middle East, which is very hard for them to get out of because the Americans, they signed an MOU, which was a capitulation document. And then they go about trying to change the terms in real time now. Marco Rubio goes out and says, it's non-binding anyway. Totally binding. The agreement says that this is the basis. We formalize this in the negotiations over the next 60 days. The Americans agreed to it. And so they're trying to change things by getting one sucker ship and forcing the Omanis to send one ship through the channel that is not authorized by Iran, the Omani channel, and getting it shot, and then initiating bombing, and then the Iranians once again rained hell down on American military assets in the region. America can't afford to rebuild them. America couldn't afford to maintain them. Trump knew this when he campaigned. When you're looking at me and you think I hate Donald Trump, it's not about hating Donald Trump, because I agreed with him 18 months ago when he was saying most of the same things I'm saying now. America can't afford to rebuild them, can't afford to maintain them, and they're getting devastated. They're withered under Iranian attack as Iran's oil is escaping the Gulf and they're making all kinds of money. I don't know how people can look at this and say America won. It's the biggest lie I've ever seen come out of the U.S. government since, it might be the biggest lie of the last 10 years. I'd have to really think on it in terms to draw up a scale, and I don't see why that's necessary. It's just insane. And then, you know, I watched video of Trump was giving a speech commemorating the national fair that they've got in Washington. Nobody's there, man. The people aren't there. Fox News is talking about how people are streaming in, and in the background, they've got a live feed, and the lawn is empty. Every state has a table and a few artifacts of the individual state. That's the big state fair. The Ferris wheel doesn't work, hasn't worked since. Flickering lights in the whole nine yards. Nobody's there. Trump gives a speech to open the thing, and you see a stream of people in MAGA hats, okay? Like, people are wearing Trump bling. And they're walking away because everybody's sick of listening to how great everything is while it all falls apart around them. They've made a central theme of the fair agriculture. The farmers have been wrecked. This is a big Trump base. They've been wrecked by American foreign policy of late. And he's promising them that things will get better down the road somewhere. Just like trucking's been devastated, he's promising them that it'll get better down the road somewhere. But right now it's terrible. And if you have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, you can look at the situation politically and you can understand that all the magic prognostications of people like Tom Luongo and the Promethean update people who keep talking about this being some magical that the Iranians are actually cooperating with the Americans. Have you heard that one? They're not actually at war. They're cooperating. It's like Q-level Operation Trust stuff to try and pretzel logic this thing into a victory. And there are still people buying it today. It just blows my mind. But one comparison I did make this week is that Friday was Ashura. Now, what is Ashura, you might ask? Why should you care about Ashura? Maybe you shouldn't. You live in North America. It shouldn't be your problem. But we have an open border policy. We're bringing everybody in, so it's on our fucking calendar. Pardon me. I'm sorry. It's on our calendars. We have to be told about this Shia holiday that it just has nothing to do with Canadian heritage by any stretch. But anyway, it's on my calendar. So it's a Shia celebration, commemoration. And I'm watching it being celebrated in Iran, and I'm watching it being celebrated in Iraq. And you have these big, massive, spontaneous crowds of people, socially cohesive, ethnically cohesive, culturally and religiously cohesive. They're dancing to music. They're singing in the streets. No one's telling them how to do it. They're just doing it in unison. Great unity all across the region, completely blacked out from media. They're not divided, they're united. And then I look at America. I look at what's happening in Washington for 250, and I'm telling you, it's ominous. The omens are not good. The tea leaves are not good. When I talk about leaning into my family, man, I need to get a bypass wired for my well so that I can plug it into a generator just to make sure that when we have average power outages, we're fine. I don't think the world's about to end anytime soon. In fact, I'm more confident of the fact that it's just going to be a slow grind into oblivion for God knows how long. But I also want to get a situation sorted out so I can pump water by hand if it comes down to it. I don't think it's going to come down to that, but what if? Heat, water, food, that's what you got to look after. These are the kinds of things I'm focusing on, and other people in this country that I talk to, they're thinking the same thing. They're focusing on their personal development, because I'll tell you, the big picture looks terrible. America's not united. It's not culturally united. It's not religiously united. It's not even secularly united. That was a tongue tie. No one's turning out for 250. Trump is turning it into a MAGA rally. It's just bad. And I hope it changes as we move towards July 4th. He's talking about a fireworks display 10 times as large as the world has ever seen. Do you think Americans care about fireworks, or do they care about the fact that they need to eat? Do they care about the fact that the price of fuel, though the paper spot price has gone down to 70 some dollars a barrel, the real price when it goes into a tanker is still enormous. And American strategic reserves are very low. There's this other myth that keeps getting circulated that if the Iranians keep messing around, the Americans are just going to go in and finish the job. With what? Here's a couple things to consider. Aircraft fuel and diesel. They're in short supply. Strategic reserves are very low in the United States. When it comes to refining capacity, you can order the refiners to start manufacturing one or the other, but not the same at the same time. There's a shortage. It's already baked in. It's already coming. The Persian Gulf is not back to normal. In spite of Trump talking about some nonsense numbers about record, the most traffic that's ever gone through in a day. It's so ridiculous, because all you have to do is open up a marine monitoring app and watch the ship traffic, and you can see for yourself that you're being gaslit. I guess a lot of people like being gaslit. They don't like truth. You know, when I started talking about this, well, before the war started, back in June of last year, I prognosticated that if June turned into a big regional war, that this is where we would head. And then when February happened, I did the same thing in March, and all I did was eat shit from people from saying it would end up exactly where it is. The 24 to 48 hour war is entering its fifth month. If only someone told you. But everybody wants to hear about how Trump is winning, and winning is great, and it's grand, and whatever. And I'm here to tell you the dream that I shared in of the reconstitution and concentration of American power in North America, and what that would do for everybody. That dream is being shattered in real time because of this entanglement in the Middle East. Boy, would I love to be wrong about that. So while he fiddles with his construction sites in Washington, and while he talks about planting 47 trees, America's on the rope. You know, I watched a press conference this morning, or I should say an interview. It wasn't a press conference, let's be accurate. And it was on Arab TV. And it was a commentator, or a news anchor was interviewing, I want to say, one of the foreign ministers of one of the GCC, one of the Gulf Cooperation countries, Gulf Cooperation Council countries, and was asked directly as to how much money that individual nation, I can't remember which one it was going to contribute to the $300 billion reconstruction fund that the Americans claim they're not going to pay for. The Gulf is going to pay for it. So the Gulf got to get missiled. The Gulf got to get bombed. The defense arrangements they've had with the United States were completely dishonored while the United States did everything they could to protect Israel, left the GCC to fend for themselves as they got bombed and droned and missiled. And now the Americans are saying they're going to pay for the reconstruction of Iran. It's bonkers. If anything's going to drive the Middle East away from American dominance, this is it. We're living that time. We are living in the sea change right now. But anyway, this foreign minister said, I don't know anything about it. We haven't committed anything because we can't commit to something we haven't heard directly about. And the commentator said, well, Marco Rubio was just here and chaired a meeting with the GCC. It didn't come up. And he said, no, it didn't. The commentator says, you didn't ask? And the guy said, why would I ask about something I've never even heard about officially? That's your $300 billion. It's just, there's no end in sight. The best thing would have been to stay out of it. As I've said for years, that this entanglement was terrible for the United States, and the only leverage Trump had was to avoid it. Well, now we're here. We're past that point. We can't lament the past too much. This is where we are. And then if you want to shift your focus, there's a great big mainstream media push right now to make you feel like the Ukrainians are winning the war with Putin. They're definitely putting pressure on Russia. There are fuel shortages in various regions across Russia because they're attacking that energy infrastructure. Precious, precious oil. The world needs, not just Russian proxies. There's all this pressure on energy. And as the strategic reserves get drawn down, like, thank God the Chinese had the foresight. Seriously. If they had have kept on buying crude this entire time, because they didn't. They stopped buying. They had some of the largest reserves in the world, and they said, you know what? We're not paying these prices, so we're just going to shut our imports. We're going to use our reserves. We're going to slow the economy a little bit, and we're going to wait this thing out. If they hadn't have done that, the price of oil would have been through the roof already. The problem is still coming. At a time when the world doesn't need more energy pressure, the Ukrainians, with American and Western guidance, are missiling Russian production. It's a bad look. And the media wants you to believe that this is them winning the war. But on the front line, Kupiansk is on the verge of falling. Krematorsk, I believe it's Krematorsk, one of the towns, or one of the major cities, that people predicted the battle would take a year, year and a half to actually work itself out there. The Russians have pretty much got the city. It's about to fall. I think it's Krematorsk. I might have my name wrong. They're winning on the front line. And that's it. Zelensky's public statements about putting pressure on Russia to end this terrible war. Zelensky doesn't want to end the war. He doesn't even want to face elections. He's an evil man at the head of an evil, corrupt regime. And you know, you want to talk about insecurity. Another thing I read about today, the purge of political, there's been a wave of mass arrest in the green zone in Baghdad, mainly targeting Iranian-linked politicians. Like, everything tells me the Americans are trying to hang on to something they can't hang on to. They're trying to ride a tiger that's bucking them. They need to just get out. But Trump can't afford it. His approval numbers are in the tank. The Republicans are in very large trouble, regardless of what you feel about the Democrats. It doesn't matter what you feel. I mean, I indicated in previous videos that I watch Midas Touch. It's one of the leftist organizations I keep an eye on because I want to know what they say. And a lot of their framing just makes me cringe. because it is clearly partisan and biased. In my opinion, it doesn't have to be right now. Like right now, if you want to do damage to the Trump administration, you don't have to work very hard. They do it for you. All you got to do is report the news accurately. It's going to do enough damage because they are damaging themselves. At any rate, the Ukrainian-Russia situation is approaching an inflection point where the Russians might have to do something bigger against NATO, because right now all they're doing is sitting back and letting NATO arm Ukraine, and Ukraine is using it to try and undermine and destroy them. And this status quo is untenable. It's always been untenable. Russian restraint is the only thing keeping us away from this thing becoming a global conflagration, which I thought the Americans would be smart enough to keep out of if it went that way. The Europeans want World War III. Let them fight it. They've done such a good job with mass migration. Why not let them fight the Russians too? None of them have a military to speak of. They have no air defenses to speak of. And yet the Russians just sit back and allow the Europeans to arm the Ukrainians and get Russians killed. Like, I don't know how long that can last for. And then when I think about the situation in Canada, look, summer recess is coming for Parliament. There's a lot of concerning bills that are moving through. There is some sign that there will be some amendments. Privacy groups are up in arms. You know, it's interesting. They talk about the social media ban. This is a weird one for me because I personally don't think kids should be on social media at all. I don't think they should be on devices. I think they should maybe be in front of a computer and supervised. But I don't think 10-year-olds should be running around with smartphones in their pocket connected to the internet. That's a bad move. I don't think kids should just be handed tablets and allowed to sit there for 8 hours playing on a tablet. It should be supervised. It should be regimented, because we are only, what was it, the first smartphones? I can't remember the year. I believe the first smartphones came in 2011, but I'm going by my recollection. We're not that far into what I call the smartphone experiment. These devices have changed everything about our lives. Same as the internet. We're only, let's say, 1993, 20 years. So we're about 40 years into real internet. And that wasn't even wide adoption. I mean, 40 years ago. I think my math is wrong. We're talking 33 years. Hold on. I'm going by 1993 because that was the first time I experienced a Java chat applet. And I thought Java applets were game-changing at the time. So that's 33 years. We're not that far in. That's my point. We're not that far in. These are big social experiments that are rewiring brains, and you can go on YouTube and you can see all the jokes and meme content that's being made about iPad kids and how comatose they are and how unprepared to deal with reality they are. Your brain has to be taught to work properly, to think analytically, so that you can handle the technology and deploy it responsibly, so that you know how to direct it. If you let it make your decisions for you, if it's all you look at, I just think, to the point, there's an element. I'm not saying I'm agreeing with the government. I'm saying I agree with the premise that kids should be shielded from the full effects of the online world. And I don't think social media is good for them. I really don't. The anonymity of the internet. Look at the shit I have to eat in my comment section and on my Twitter channel. The things people say about me. And I'm resilient. I got thick skin. I've been doing this a long time. But when I started out, it affected me and hurt me a lot more. Now think about that when your 16 or 17-year-old kid who's going to public school has to deal with bullies, has to deal with kids. The only kids that get attention in class anymore are the ones that are picking up desks and hucking them, because we can't take the problem kids and put them in spec ed anymore, because that would be discriminatory. So we jam them into the general population and everybody suffers for it. And it sucks. And the parents in those situations who demand their kid get treated like normal when they're not normal, they suck. When you apply the pressure that they're seeing in high school, the peer pressure, the pressure of the classroom, and then you get the anonymity of the internet, and you get predators, and you get all of these factors, man, we should be shielding our children from that. We should be controlling their access, and we should be teaching them how to use their minds and how to be resilient before we just hand them open and free access to social media and the internet. And there's probably not a single 15 or 16-year-old out there that will agree with me. And that's the way it is. That's why they shouldn't vote, because your elders when we're responsible, because we've been there before and we've been 15 or 16 before. Sometimes we know better than you. That's the nature of the relationship. If you have good parents, no one's ever going to love you as much. So on the surface, I see some merit in the idea, but not in the hands of this government and not from the government. Parents should be making this choice. They should be managing it themselves. That's just one thing. There's all of these privacy concerns. There's all of this concern about the future of Canada, what's going to happen with NAFTA negotiations, and I think there's still time to get into all that. It's going to be a long summer. Trump is busy with golf courses and renovations in Washington, and occasionally he diverts attention back to the Iran war, which is still a war. It's just all of my hopes and all of my ideas about how things could turn out fantastically, not too bad, good, somewhat bad. It's just all gone to pot, man. And I do think there's bright spots, and I do think there's silver linings, and I'm optimistic about it not becoming... The Ukraine-Russia situation is, to me, more threatening now than the Iranian situation. I don't think the Iranian situation's over. I think it's bad, but I also think it's at a stalemate right now. The Americans don't want to admit they've lost, and the Iranians don't want to pretend that they've lost. They don't want to let go of the fact that they've strategically won, because they have. And anybody that's in denial about that needs to give their head a shake. I mean, they're either deliberately lying or they're just so committed to their cause and so committed to their ideas or so committed to the prognostications of Q and Promethean updates that they can't think for themselves anymore. Pretty wild, man. You know, to be able to project, and I wasn't alone. I'm not some magical seer, but to be able to project forward exactly how this would turn out, and to get nothing but invective, I haven't had a single person reach out and say, you know what, man, you had a point. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have name-called you. I shouldn't have called you a commie. I shouldn't have called you a TDS sufferer. I shouldn't have questioned your mental health. I shouldn't have cursed and swear. I shouldn't have insulted your family over my allegiance to a politician. At any rate, maybe I'm still a bit edgy because I'm very committed to what I'm doing. I was something like, I don't even want to say it out loud. I'm 6'5". I can carry a lot of weight. I can probably carry 280 to 300 pounds and not really look too fat. But when you start pushing 330, you know, it really starts to look bad. That was my previous all-time high. And then at the start of the month, I was 370, north of. I'm now approaching 350. And if I play my cards right over the next 3 days, including today, I'll be under 350 to start next month. And that's where my headspace is. I'm just trying to maintain that. You know, I spend time with the kids, focus on them. I'm really stoked up about my son reading. And my daughter will follow behind. She's already trying to sound out words. Like, she benefits so much by... He's like the icebreaker, and she gets to sail right up the channel that he makes. And it's a wonderful thing to watch. And, you know, I'm really proud of my wife and doing what I can to enable her. She does a lot of work in the homeschooling community, and she does a lot of work in the community as well. And there's a school room in the house. I should probably just take a picture of it and share it with you because I'm so proud of that space now. She's used Facebook Marketplace to acquire tables. She's done everything so cheaply. The only thing that hasn't been cheap is the curriculum acquisition, but we're, you know, with cupboards full of curriculum. These kids are learning. My son is going through it's a grade one level kid. First off, it's summer. He's still learning. He's getting a full course right now. He's memorized all the provinces of Canada, all the capital cities. He knows like principal resources that are produced by province. Now he's going through all the states, like every single state and territory he's learning about. He's drawing their flags. He's learning the capital cities. He's learning what they produce. He's learning about their history. I never got that any time in public school. We were never taught anything about America. I've got old school books from when I was his age, and I flip through my school books. He is so far beyond where I was at that age. His printing is better. His diction is better. His writing is better. His drawing is better. His comprehension is better. He's kicking my ass. And I love every minute of it. And so it's easy to kind of lean into that. Lean into just basking in the light of what... Oh, darn it all. I don't know if that was still recording. My screen just shut off. Anyway, all to say, it's easy to lean into that as I'm just trying to stay away from food. And when I am eating, because I have broke the fast a couple times, I'm using that time as an experiment to figure out what's causing the inflammation and other issues I've been having. And, you know, I've pretty well got it down to, I've got it down to a couple things. I don't think I'm meant for dairy, at least at this size. Maybe when I lose a lot of weight, maybe dairy will be more of a thing, but I think dairy's giving me some problems. I also think certain types of bread, and I don't eat a lot of bread. That's for one. I am mostly carny. I should just go all the way, but like I'm trying to figure some stuff out, especially with the dairy, because that's kind of considered carnivore, but some people say it's not, some people say it is. But I'm really leaning into it, and I've got a lot of runway to go. I've got a lot more work to do. And I want to get it done as quick as I can. Like my plan right now, it's a loose plan. And I say it's loose because it didn't work out. This was the first week of my plan, which is essentially I fast from Sunday at dinner until Thursday at dinner. And then I eat over the weekend. And then I work out all weekend as much as I want. And then I don't work out during the fast. And the reason I picked that 4-day window is because you're deep into your body sending signals to your bones, to your bone marrow, to produce stem cells. And then when you refeed, your body just floods the zone with stem cells of just about, targeting just about every organ in your body, every system. It's a complete systemic reset. And because I have such a high volume of surplus weight, I can afford to do this system reset systemically for week after week after week after week. All the way, the plan is to go all the way to September 21st, to the end of summer, and see where I'm at that stage. And where it fell apart this week is I broke my fast, and then I wanted to fast some more, so I did a 24-hour fast, and I'm in the middle of probably doing the same thing again today. I'm supposed to be eating. This is supposed to be like heavy eating and not even thinking about it, but like I really want to just lose this weight. I really just want to get this job done. And it is a job. You know, I used to smoke cigarettes when I was younger, quit that. It was pretty easy. I've been into other things. I quit just about everything I've ever been interested in my life. Every bad habit, pretty much. But overeating has been the most challenging, and I just want to kill it. It's like a demon. I want to kill it. I want to exercise it. I want it gone. And so that's where my mind's been. The world, nothing, I think the trend is set. I was going to say nothing's going to change immediately this summer. I don't know if that's true, but the trend is set. I don't see the necessary change of policy coming out of the United States. I thought with the MOU, I was optimistic at first because I thought this time is different, and it wasn't. Didn't even take a week to reveal that it wasn't different. It probably just more market manipulation. Like Trump didn't do this stuff in his first term. There wasn't all this insider trading and nonsense that's clearly going on. This time around, it's different. Anyway, I love y'all. I'm still here. Well, maybe I don't love y'all. I kind of do. As a group, I love y'all. Some of you probably don't love you too much. But I'm glad you're here. Even you dismal Doras and negative Nellies and the people who always, some people in the audience who for years, going back as long as I can remember, have always been on the other side of my analysis. They've always taken the other side and have been wrong over and over and over again. And they're still taking the other side of the bet. And I don't mean for that to sound like I want you to just believe every word I say. But by the Lord, it would be nice once in a while if people could admit that by being impartial, not being motivated by narcissism or ego or the business model. You know what makes me puke? Bile rise in my chest is when I go on YouTube and I look at the left and I look at the right and I look at sports commentary and I look at legal commentary and I look at documentary commentary and I look at, because I don't watch fiction, I'm a nonfiction guy. They're all using the same thumbnails. They're all doing the same approach. They've all got the same catchy headlines that have nothing to do with their videos. Everybody's playing the same game and nobody's thinking outside the box. And it drives me nuts. And I'm never going to be somebody who just clocks in every single day and grinds out content just to make content so that I can, like, I want to say something like today. This felt great. Because even though I'm not making content, I'm still dialed in every single day because it's who I am. It's what I do, at least when I have time for it. And, you know, I do have things to say. I don't feel like I have a lot of good to say right now. And I think I'm saying that impartially. Like, I don't have a motivation to just deliver bad news. I'm not concerned with clicks. I'm not concerned. I'm concerned with, like I said before, there's maybe 1,000, 1,500 people, maybe 2,000 people out there who really like what I do and will watch to the end of just about every single video. That's what I think about. And so when I'm quiet for several days or a week, even if I'm very focused on what I'm doing, I think about every single day, I think about the fact that I'm not communicating with the people who I value and who care about what I'm doing. Like, I actually think about the individuals. I don't think many content creators bother to think about their community. I don't think they care about any of it. I think it's just business. It's just business. And I can't help every single time I log in or I look at my channel or I do anything. I can't help but think there's people behind these accounts. There's people who are choosing to take their time to watch and write comments. There's people there. And even if I'm not obligated, because I've often said I'm not obligated, I don't have to be here. I don't have to do this. But I feel a sense of obligation every single day. It's like, man, I have not communicated with the people. I don't want to say my people, and I hate to call you the people because I feel like you're my people, but then that bridges into, like, there it is. He's starting a cult. He's looking at us like we're his possessions. It's not like that. But you are my people. You're my people who come here and spend thousands of hours watching my content. That's pretty special. It's a hell of a gift. So anyway, I'm going to leave it there because I have no idea how long this is. How far are we? We are at 42 minutes, jeepers creepers. All right, see you in the next one.